The Santa Barbara Theater of the Air presents Danielle Aubuchon, Nancy Kowalik, and Tony Marotti in Lou Gehrig Did Not Die of Cancer by Jason Miller. We're in the suburban living room of Victor and Barbara Spinelli, done in a style sometimes called mortgage middle class. We find Barbara alone, sitting rather rigidly on the edge of the couch. She is rehearsing lines from Hedda Gabler, a play she will star in this evening at the local community theater.
At 10 o'clock he will be here. I can see him already. With vine leaves in his hair, flushed and fearless. And then you see. Then he will have regained control over himself. Then he will be a free man for all his days. I want for once in all my life to have the power to mold a human destiny. I want for once in all my life to have the power to mold a human destiny. I have never had the power, and now I want it desperately. Damn it. Barbara speaking. No, he's not, Phil. I expected him over an hour ago. Did the team lose? Well, then, you know, he's probably at the lounge drowning his sorrow. I know, and you know, and everybody with rational sense knows they're only kids, and it's only a little league team, but Victor isn't too rational these days. What? The umpire is going to sue him? Victor hit him in the mouth with a catcher's mitt. How can he sue us for that? A front tooth? I know it's a bad example for the kids, but he just gets so involved. Yeah, okay, call him about 7 and you can catch him before we go to the theater. Hedda Gabler. No, it's not a racy play. I play Hedda, of course. It's not a funny name in Norwegian. Yes, tonight's opening night. $2. Yeah, all right, call. Yeah, call at 7, Phil. He should be here. Yeah, bye. Moron. For once in my life, I want the power to mold a human destiny. For once in my life, I want the power to mold a human destiny. Damn it. Hello? No, I'm sorry, Mr. Wiener. My husband's not here. God almighty. Yeah, I know. I'm sure your son's as good a hitter as anyone on the team. But I'm sorry. I don't know why Victor doesn't play him more. Now, Mr. Wiener, calm down. That's not true. That's simply ridiculous. My husband's not anti-Semitic. Good God, Mr. Wiener, you're acting like a child. Look, I'm very busy. Call him tomorrow and talk to him yourself because I have to hang up now. Yes, yeah, I know. Yes. Yes, bye. Bye, Mr. Wiener. First you shall have a cup of tea, you little fool. And then at 10 o'clock, Eilert Loveborg will be here with vine leaves in his hair, like a young Greek god, power incarnate. Give me patience. Hello. Won't you come in and sit down?
I'm very sorry to barge in here like this, Mrs. Spinelli, especially since we've never been introduced. My name is Helen Martin, and I live down the street. I feel very foolish coming here like this, but I would like to talk to your husband concerning my son, Jeffrey. My son, Jeffrey, plays on your husband's Little League team, you see.
I see. Well, at least you're civilized about it. Usually the parents come frothing at the mouth. Can I get you something to drink? My husband should be here momentarily.
Oh, no, thank you. I assure you, Mrs. Spinelli, I am not going to lose my temper. And I hope I'm not intruding.
No, please don't feel that way. Oh, my God. Parents usually arrive at the door ready to crucify Victor on the nearest telephone pole.
Well, I certainly did not come here to cause you or Mr. Spinelli any discomfort. I just think there are some things he should know in regard to Jeffrey. I mean, Jeffrey is the type of boy. I'm not asking for favoritism, Mrs. Spinelli, and I'm afraid it seems as if I am, but my son Jeffrey is rather unaggressive. Oh, he loves to play, but I'm afraid he's not one to throw himself fiercely into the fray. I encouraged him to use his mind and completely neglected his body.
Well, that certainly wasn't the improper thing to do. Mm. I mean, most of the children around here seem to be rather mindless.
But you see, I had forgotten the value competitive sports have for a boy. What I'm trying to say is, since we moved here, I encouraged Jeffrey to become part of a team. In fact, I encouraged him to join your husband's group. You know, Mrs. Spinelli, Jeffrey adores your husband. He really does. And it hurts him very much when... Well, the problem is, Jeffrey never plays. And I know this because I go to all the games. And he just sits way down at the end of the bench alone, and it just hurts me to see him so miserable. And children can be very cruel, you know, and because he's not really equal, because he really doesn't belong, he's become an object of ridicule. The boys refer to him as Mary Jane. He's terribly hurt and ashamed. And I don't know what to do. He has no father to turn to, and he refuses to talk to me now, so I was hoping your husband could just pay a little attention to Jeffrey. You know, just a pat on the head or a friendly word now and then. See, I'm sure that if the other boys see that Mr. Spinelli accepts him, it'll make it much easier for Jeffrey.
Good Lord, I have been giving a lecture, haven't I?
You know, when you get an ex-school teacher started, you have to ring a bell to shut her up.
There's no need for apologies, Mrs. Martin. I understand your problem. Believe me, I do. My husband, as you probably have gathered from seeing the games, is a great big giant-sized little boy.
Oh, but he's so passionately involved, Mrs. Spinelli. I mean, watching him, I get the feeling that he deeply cares about the boys.
Sure. He cared so much today, he knocked out some man's tooth, and now we just might get slapped with a lawsuit.
I was there, and the man did, it seemed to me, provoke your husband. He called Mr. Spinelli in a loud voice a dumb wop. Now, I think your husband was more embarrassed than angry because everyone started to laugh when the man said it, but he hit him with that big round thing.
The catcher's mitt.
And also considering that the play in question was disputable, I don't think your husband was entirely wrong.
I don't think it's a good example for these boys to see Victor assaulting people, do you?
Well, no, I don't. But these young boys are surrounded by so many neutral people today. I mean, so many people just straddle the fence, taking absolutely no side with anything that... I think it's good for them to see a man who believes in his convictions, even defends them if necessary.
But it's only a game. It's not Victor's profession or vocation. He just gets so volcanic over the whole thing.
Yes, he does put on quite a show. I mean, between ourselves, sometimes I think he's better than the game.
Speaking of shows, I have to make one in about an hour. We open tonight.
Oh, yes. I see you're playing Hedda Gabler with the community group.
Yeah, and it is without a doubt the most exhausting role I have ever undertaken.
I saw you, you know, in Summer and Smoke, and I thought you were tremendous. Really.
Well, thank you. Well, I give Stephen Frankel, he's the director, marvelous talent. Should be on Broadway. Really too much integrity, though. Broadway commercialism disgusts him. Well, I give him credit for that performance. I was lost, just lost. He pulled me through.
I'd better be off. Maybe I can call your husband later this evening.
You better make it tomorrow. He'll be at the theater tonight. And then the cast party, which is simply a mad affair, never ends before 5.
Well, I'll call tomorrow. You've been very kind.
No, not at all. I really enjoyed talking to you. And I hope you can make the show some evening.
Oh, I certainly will. Maybe Sunday night.
Good. We can have a few drinks afterwards, and you can tell me just what you thought about the show, as long as it's complimentary.
I'd love to. Well, what is it they say? Break an arm.
Leg.
Leg. Just shows you how out of contact I am with things. Oh, I must tell you that your husband's company makes the best spaghetti sauce I've ever tasted. Really.
Spaghetti is Spinelli.
Yes, it certainly is. Well, I really must run. Goodbye again, and I may see you Sunday.
Fine and dandy. Bye now. Barbara speaking. No, Mr. Toomey, my husband is not here, and I don't know when he'll be in. Yeah, I gathered it was in relation to your son. Oh, is that so? Really? Well, I don't know why he only plays your son 2 innings a game. Maybe he's afraid your son will have a heart attack if he plays him any more than 2 innings. Oh, hold on. My husband's just coming through the door. Here, Victor, it's a friend of yours. I've had it up to here.
Hello. Yeah, Mr. Toomey. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah? Well, let me tell you something. Your son cracks under pressure. He can't take the pressure. No, he's a 2-inning ball player. After that, his nerves go to pieces.
Oh, God.
Yeah, well, none of us likes to hear the truth, Mr. Toomey. Fine, you do that. Take him off the team. Send him to the tennis courts. Yeah. Yeah. Send him to dance schools. Very graceful. Nobody's casting aspersions on anything. I said he'd be a better dancer than a ball player. That's all. Mr. Toomey, go to hell.
Nerves going to pieces. Victor, he's only an 11-year-old child.
He's a shaky kid. He doesn't have it in here.
He's just a baby.
By the time he's 16, he'll be on tranquilizers.
You are hard to believe, Victor Spinelli. You are just too much.
Oh, am I? Hey, look, Greta, save the acting for the stage, right?
Yeah, I will. I certainly will. If you'll save your antics for the boxing ring.
Who called?
That moron, Phil. The man is going to sue us, Victor.
Yeah, let him sue. Honey, I really laid one on that loudmouth. Bam! His ears almost fell off.
There are other ways of settling disputes than hitting someone in the mouth with a catcher's mitt.
What catcher's mitt? I hit him with my fist. This fist closed just like this. And I hit him like so. Bada-bing.
Really? Then Phil must have made a mistake because he said you hit him with a catcher's mitt.
Listen, sweetie, I don't need weapons.
Huh? Well, Mrs. Martin must be mistaken, too. She said you hit him with a catcher's mitt, and she was there.
Well, who's Mrs. Martin?
Her son plays on your team. I believe he's the one who sits on the end of the bench alone.
Oh, Mary Jane. Mrs. Martin's Mary Jane's mother.
No, she's Jeffrey's mother. That boy adores you, and you won't even give him the time of day. He's deeply hurt by all this juvenile name-calling. Mrs. Martin came here to talk to you about it. She's very upset.
You want to know the truth? I gave the kid a suit, right? A gift. He is so bad, it's unbelievable. I felt sorry for this skinny, bloodless kid. I put him on a team. I let him bat once, just once. First game, I let him bat. I thought the kid was going to pee all over home plate. 1, 2, 3. He comes back, sits at the end of the bench. That's where he's going to stay to the end of the season.
She's going to call you tomorrow. Use a little tact when you talk to her, please.
I'll charm the pants right off of her.
Figuratively speaking, of course.
Is there any other way?
Put a little juice in you, and you're just a wit.
Yeah, you know, I think I'll try out for one of your plays. I'd probably electrify everyone.
Well, Stephen was thinking of doing the Hairy Ape.
Is it a good role? Would I be the hero?
Victor, You wouldn't have to memorize a line. You just walk out there and burp and belch and scratch.
Ah, forget it. I don't think I'd get along with that faggoty friend of yours.
Stephen is not a faggot. He's a gentleman and an excellent director.
He's also an excellent faggot.
Don't tell me. I work with a man for 6 months, and I happen to know for a fact that he's
straight. For 6 minutes, I'm telling you, he's sweet. Come on, a tight-ass little walk, holding his cigarette like a baton, ascots, lisping. Baby, he's 3 feet off the ground. Flies like a birdie looking for a nest.
Oh, it's just so you, Victor, to mistake breeding and culture for something crude.
Fine, so he's read a few books. Went to NYU, uses $100 words fine. Live and let live, that's my philosophy. But I wouldn't take a shower with him. That's all I'm saying.
You're just jealous of him.
Jealous of him? Come on. Stop, look, listen. If he was Adam and you were ever Eve, you'd still be in the Garden of Eden alone.
Why do you resent people who have intelligence and ability and class? People with exciting minds, huh? People who can think and feel beyond all the rest of your ordinary drab beer belly friends.
Because my beer belly friends are not phony. They don't have fake smiles, fake laughs, fake words. And they don't wear pants 5 sizes too small. Does that answer your question?
I know what it is. I know why the people from the theater bother you so.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Because they make you feel stupid. They make you feel awkward and nervous and stupid. They make you feel just like that little Martin boy because you almost pee in your pants every time I have them over here.
Are you serious? Come on.
It's true. Last week when the group was here and we were talking about books and Stephen asked you if you had ever read Proust and you said,
oh, sure, all the time. He was one of your favorite writers.
Well, everybody just froze with embarrassment, just absolutely went rigid with embarrassment because they knew you never even heard of Proust, let alone read him. Oh, God, it was humiliating.
I went to college. I know who Proust is. Proust. Proustie.
Oh, you graduated with a business degree from NYU. I don't call that going to college. And that even took you 6 years to get.
Well, isn't that just too goddamn bad about you and your intellectual friends? Huh? Sitting around talking about Proust and drinking all my liquor. Sitting around drinking all my booze and talking about, what's his name, the guy that ended up a drunk. You know, the guy, they made a movie about him, the guy that...
F. Scott Fitzgerald had terrifying problems.
Well, sure he did. One of them was alcohol. And the other guy. The other guy, the one who shot himself in the mouth with a shotgun, Hemingway. Here you are sitting around talking for 2 hours about a drunk and a suicide. Talking like crazy. Oh, it was marvelous. What perception, what depth. Depth, a fangu depth. These two guys couldn't even face life. One drowns in scotch, and the other one scatters his brains all over the living room. What's all the cheering about?
Please don't use yourself as a model of life-facing, Victor.
I stare it right in the face, baby. I don't sit around talking about how other people face it, because I face it every day of my life.
Mm-hmm.
Huh? I think my thoughts. I don't steal them from books, and I don't pick dead men's brains for ideas so I can impress a bunch of people who aren't going to be impressed because they're too busy trying to impress me. See? You know what I noticed about your little sewing circle the other night? Everybody talked, nobody listened. Everybody sat around doing monologues. Nobody gave a good goddamn what anyone else was saying.
Yeah, and you. You just sat back there like Buddha, like a big fat Buddha, silly grin and all, and said nothing.
Yeah, right.
Just like you sit back and say nothing every time your father comes to this house.
Let's leave my father out of this, Barbara.
No, let's not. Let's really clear the air, huh? You can face anything, right? Old King Kong Spinelli can face a little thing like the truth. Do you know you are terrified of your father, just as you are terrified of my friends?
You're going to say that once too often. I'm going to knock you right on your fat, bitchy ass.
Oh, do you have your catcher's mitt ready?
All right, keep it up, mouth. My relationship with my father is my business, not yours.
It's very much my business when he comes in here telling me how to run my house.
Oh, he tells you nothing.
No? No? How come every time he arrives here for his semi-monthly visit, he has the nerve to ask me if I'm pregnant? He doesn't ask anymore. He demands it.
Are you pregnant yet?
He gives me that Neanderthal look, and I'm afraid to say no.
He wants a grandchild. So what?
Oh, he's got two from your sister and one from your brother. What does he want, an army of grandchildren?
He wants a boy. He wants the name continued. He's from the old country, all right?
He's from the old country, all right.
All right. You've said enough.
I just want to tell him we are living our lives separate from him. He is not going to terrorize me into having a child before I want one.
How can you have a child, Barbara? You got a little piece of steel up there between your legs, remember?
Tell him about the coil.
Oh, he wouldn't understand. He's old-fashioned about that.
Well, your father and I are going to come to an understanding. What's he going to do? Stop his annual donation to us? Cut you out of your share of the company, huh? Fire you?
He'd be very hurt.
He had the nerve to ask me to go to a specialist to see if I could make babies. Make babies!
We've been married for 5 years. It's a legitimate question, for Christ's
sake. The man owns us.
Well, I do a good job for him. We're paying our own way.
Victor, that is not true. Not really.
Look, they've accepted my new advertising line. Spinelli gives you the sauciest spaghetti. The old man was delighted with that line. We might even put it to music.
Accepting it and using it are two different things.
He'll use it. I know it.
He accepted Spinelli, the sauce that made spaghetti famous, but did he use it? No! He used Spinelli is spaghetti instead, which was Bob's suggestion. But I tell everybody it was yours.
You don't have to do that.
Victor, all you're doing is collecting your check every Friday.
Well, I sold him on the idea of sponsoring a little league team, didn't I? He bought the uniforms, jackets, everything.
Only because he loves baseball. He didn't even ask you about the team the last time he was here.
It bothers him because we're in last place.
Victor, this is insane, honey. Look, I'd leave here tomorrow with you if you'd go back to the city and start with Harry again. Face the facts, Victor. Here with your father's firm, you will always be a lackey, the son of the boss.
I face the facts. I am going to prove to the old man that I can carry the weight of my share of the company.
Oh, for God's sake. You've been trying to prove something to your father for the last 30 years. You thought he wanted you to be a baseball player. You tried it. You know what happened. He wanted you to be a doctor. You flunked out. You did everything he wanted you to and nothing you wanted. You keep telling yourself lies, pretending you're important to the company.
Oh, let's not talk about lying to ourselves. Don't tell me about daydreams.
And what does that mean?
It means this stupid community play acting has gone straight to your head. Dancing lessons on Thursday, speech lessons on Monday. And you are not going to go to New York with any faggot to see an agent about commercials. You understand?
That agent is coming to the show tonight at Stephen's request. And if he likes my work, I'm going to New York and read for anything that might come up.
He's coming to see the play tonight, huh? You forget about going to New York, baby. Wake up, because tonight the dream is over. Bye-bye, big city.
You saw a dress rehearsal last week. Dress rehearsals are never very good.
Do you know that it was so rotten? Everybody was so terrible, I almost puked. Everybody falling all over everybody else. The guy that plays your old lover or something, he opens the door, the goddamn door falls down. He's standing there with a doorknob in his hand. I mean, that agent's going to die laughing.
If he doesn't die of laughter, if by some small miracle he wants to get me work, I am going to New York. Do you understand?
Hey, do you know where your talent is? Your talent's in your boobs. Everybody goes to see your enormous boobs. I'm not kidding. Your boobs come on stage first, and then you follow. That should be your stage name, Barbara Boobs, Old Bullet Breasts.
Thank you for your confidence in me, Victor. But I'm still going to work in New York.
You better move out of my house, then.
Whose house?
Mine. This house is mine. My house.
You know, my acting started as just a simple diversion, an escape from all the sterility that surrounds me. Just a little exercise of female vanity. But now it's become all I have. It's become a necessity. And you're right, Victor. Yeah, it is a daydream, but it's mine, and nobody gave it to me, and so I'm not afraid of anyone taking it away. And as things stand now, it may very well be the most important thing in my life.
I swear to you, if you go to New York, never come back to this house again.
I am through sitting with your father and you every third Thursday like clockwork. Sitting in this living room, listening to that goddamn grieving voice of Caruso for 3 hours. I am done inflicting that torture upon myself. And now I shall go upstairs and finish dressing for the theater.
What? Hello, Phil. Yeah. Look, Phil, nobody calls me a wop. No, with my fist. Phil, the mitt was in the other hand. Yeah, I know it doesn't look good for the league. What? What do you mean fired? You can't fire me. I'm the sponsor, remember? My old man bought the suits, the balls, the bats. I own the team. You did. My old man said what? Are you serious? My old man said that? No. I do not want to coach the 8 to 10 year old Christs. Like being shipped to the minors. No. No hard feelings. I'll see you around.
If you drive me down to the theater now, you still have time to come back and get dressed.
I'm not going to the theater.
Where are the keys? You know what I think? We've simply outgrown each other. Now, after 5 years together, I have to remind myself.
Hey, I never made love to you without getting the feeling you were defending yourself against something. And that's not the booze talking either.
I'm going to the party. I'll be very late.
Have a nice time. Let's have a little music. Look at all the books we have. O'Neill, Mailer, Stanislavski, Hemingway, Proust, oh Proust, my Proust. Burn the books. The big book burning. Where's a match? Who are you? Oh, don't tell me. I know. I have it. You are Mrs. Martin, mother of Jeffrey Martin, boy baseball player.
Why, yes, I am. How did you know?
It's a secret. Let me turn this off.
Well, I promise only to take a little of your time. Your wife was coming down the street in the car as I was coming up. She stopped and said you were home and available to talk about Jeffrey, so here I am.
Isn't my wife a charitable person, Mrs. Martin? She is just the little flower of Pleasant Hills.
She's a lovely person, Mr. Spinelli.
Broke the mold. Just threw the old mold right into the old polluted river. Well, come on in. Let me fix you a drink. This is my trophy case, Mrs. Martin. I shall take you on a little tour of my trophy case. This little gold gentleman here, I received the night of September 10th, 1953. Most valuable player of the American Legion baseball tournament. Hit 3 home runs in that tournament, 2 doubles, and stole home. Yes, sir. Number 12 in your scorecards, but number 1 in your hearts, Victor Spinelli. And this little gold gentleman here represents the home run championship of the year 1953. 38 home runs. Victor Spinelli, same night, September 10th, 1953. And this one here, oh, well, you see, this one here is the king of the little gold gentleman, because it represents the award given by the American Legion to the best ball player on the East Coast, Mrs. Martin, the most promising young baseball player on the whole Eastern Seaboard. And the name reads, Victor Spinelli, September 10th, 1953. I just realized I never won a goddamn thing after September 10th, 1953. My day of doom. One brief night of glory and then wham, obscurity. Let me fix you a drink.
Scotch and soda, please.
Scotch and soda, scotch and soda, one scotch and soda. Right. Now, Mrs. Martin, you are here to discuss Jeffrey.
Yes, I am. I talked at length, I'm afraid at very great length, about this.
Wonderful woman, my wife, cries at the fall of a sparrow. Almost divorced me last winter when I had to drown the 4 kittens. It was a terrible mess. I'm sorry, go on.
Yes, well, you see, well, I don't mean to sound...
Like a bitch? Don't be silly. Believe me, that is not my impression of you at all, Mrs. Martin. Believe me. I know you are not a bitch. There is not a bitchy bone in your body. My impression of you is of a mother who is sad because her son is sad and feels on the outside of everything and everybody.
That just about sums it up.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand about these things, Mrs. Martin. I mean about being on the outside looking in at that circle of importance. You know what I mean. I mean, I feel for the poor slob who can't find the handle. Not that your son is a slob, Mrs. Martin, but when it comes to baseball, he can't find the handle. I'm going to be very blunt. Your son is a rotten baseball player.
I know that, Mr. Spinelli. I can see that for myself, but that's not what's bothering him so much. Really, all he wants is to be included and respected and not be made a scapegoat.
Well, isn't that what we all want? Well, I want it, you want it, everybody wants it. We really don't change that much, do we?
Mr. Spinelli?
What? Oh, I was just thinking of something. You're a very pretty woman, Mrs. Martin.
Why, thank you.
I think beauty should be complimented. I am a great complimenter of beauty. So let me fill you up. Drink up. You can trust me.
I gather you're a fan of Caruso.
Actually, it bores the hell out of me. I'm Italian, but I don't understand a word he's saying. My old man likes him. I listen to him out of habit, I guess.
Well, he has an unbelievable voice.
Oh, to the Italians, he's a magnifico, a national hero.
I think he must be magnifico to anyone that ever heard him. I mean, a voice like that is not of this world, if you know what I mean.
Well, we got to have somebody besides Capone.
Capone?
Al Capone. The gangster. He's an Italian hero, too.
I always thought he was Jewish.
No. Now, listen. To the Italians, Capone and Valentino are more popular than the Pope.
And Caruso, too?
Yeah, Caruso, too. Look, I won't be coaching the team anymore, so I don't know what help I can be.
You've been replaced?
Yeah, got my walking papers.
Was it because of what you did this afternoon?
Yeah. Bad for the boys to see me punching people around. Bad for the Spinelli spaghetti image.
But you were insulted. I mean, to see a man stand up for his honor is a good example for the boys, I should think.
Do you really believe that?
Oh, I most certainly do.
My wife thinks I'm crazy.
Well, you did the only thing a man could do after being crudely provoked. And I'm very sorry that you've been replaced.
You know, Jeffrey's a very kind of quiet kid. He's not the athletic type.
No, he's more like me than his father. His father was very athletic. He loved to hunt and loved to ski.
You're a widow, Mrs. Martin?
Not really.
What do you mean? You're either a widow or you're not a widow. There's no in between.
Well, I feel like a widow, but my husband is very much alive. And I'm not divorced, nor am I legally separated. It sounds confusing, doesn't it?
It sounds in between.
Yeah. Well, you see, Jeffrey's father, when Jeffrey was very young, decided that married life was a little too confining. So he left. Anyway, Jeffrey now is in the habit of adopting fathers for himself. You know, teachers, instructors, etc. You were his idol from the first day that you let him on the team. And even when he didn't make a hit with the other boys, and although he didn't play much, he never blamed you or said anything unkind about you. I think he felt like he let you down. He admired your spirit and the way you fought and demanded justice for your little team. Respect, justice, and fair play are very important to Jeffrey.
Well, I wasn't anything that eloquent, Mrs. Martin. I just get mad very easily, especially when I'm in last place.
I'd better run and let you get to your wife's play.
Oh, no, it's all right. No, I'm going tomorrow night. Tomorrow night they'll know at least half their lines.
Oh.
Now, sit down. Have another scotch. You just moved here recently?
About 6 months ago.
You work in town?
I taught school in New York up until last year. I am now on what you might call an extended sabbatical. No, actually, I sought refuge up here from the city, which can be pretty frightening to a single woman.
You don't have many friends up here, huh?
Oh, some. I prefer the quiet pace now. I don't know if you know what I mean. I've had the carnival side of life with my husband, and now I just want to take a rest, a kind of inventory of myself, if you know what I mean.
Know what I think? I think you're still waiting for your husband to come back.
I might have agreed with you about 3 years ago. Right now, I don't know. Maybe that's why I'm here in my suburban retreat.
You want some advice? Advice from the original Ann Landers? I think he's gone. He's not coming back. I think he's going to fly right past the sun. He's not going to come back. And you're still a good-looking woman. It's time for Jeffrey to have a father. I'd start hunting if I were you. I'm a blunt bastard, so you have to excuse me. I'm very good at telling other people how to put out their own fires when my house is burning to the ground. So that's an inside joke, Mrs. Martin.
Strange as it may seem, Mr. Spinelli, I don't know if I can love anyone but my husband. I have tried, and I have failed. I've gone through the sordid politics of manhunting and almost convinced myself one or two times that I had found someone that I could be happy with. But inevitably, my wandering husband would write just a short note, saying nothing, really. Or he would call for some strange little town whose name I've never heard of and talk to me in the middle of the night, and we would become nostalgic, and I would cry, and he would cry, and he would promise and swear on all the gods that ever existed that he loved me, and he was coming home to stay for good. Well, after one of those midnight scenes, the other man just never existed. I may be old-fashioned, but I am getting very tired of waiting.
You're all right, Mrs. Martin. A little strange, but you're all right.
You're right. I am a little strange.
No, I'm just kidding. You're a good woman.
Sometimes I think I was born 200 years too late. Mary Shelley and I would have had a lot in common.
Hello. No, this is the ex-coach. You're a strong woman. A little strange, but strong. I tell you what I'm going to do. I just got an idea. Since I am now the retired ex-coach of the Spinelli Spoilers, I have a little memento, souvenir. My father gave me a little gift for Jeffrey. This is a baseball. Very special baseball. It's a special baseball because it was hit by Lou Gehrig on Sunday, June 14th, 1939. Into the left field D-box seats at Yankee Stadium. Present among the other 30,000 people were me and my father. You see, my father loved baseball, and he loved Lou Gehrig. And on that Sunday, Lou Gehrig, not even knowing my father loved him like a son, not even knowing my father was at the game, Lou Gehrig hit this baseball right into my father's lap. It was the first and last time I ever believed in God. My father was in a trance. It was a miracle. And after the game, my father and me waited outside until it was almost dark and the stadium was empty. My father said not one word. Waited alone in the darkness for Lou Gehrig. Finally, he comes out. And my father went over and spoke to him in Italian. And then he did the most incredible thing. Lou Gehrig did the most amazing thing. He hugged my father. And then we're laughing together. And I remember I started to cry. Standing there watching Lou Gehrig hug my father. And I don't know why to this day. He didn't notice me, though. When he came over, he shook my hand and handed me the autographed ball. Hey, he just smiled up at him. To this day, I don't know what my father said to Lou Gehrig in the dark outside of Yankee Stadium. Ed, strange feeling. Even now, you know?
Yes, I do.
And when Lou Gehrig died a few years later, the day Lou Gehrig died, my father cried. That was the first and last time I ever saw my father cry. Even when they lowered my mother in the ground, his face was dry. Even when the scouts came to see me play, the big league scouts came to see me play. I struck out 3 times. They wanted nothing to do with me. He said nothing. But the day Lou Gehrig died, when he heard the news, he said one thing. Lou Gehrig did not die of cancer. He died of a broken heart. Those are the exact and only words he said on that day. Isn't it incredible that my father could be hurt so much by the death of a stranger? Someone he'd never even... You give this ball to Jeffrey. I've had it too long.
Are you sure you want Jeffrey to have this?
Yeah, things like this mean a lot to a boy, and I don't need it anymore. I've outgrown it. You know what I like about you, Mrs. Martin? You listen. You really listen to somebody. Make somebody want to talk.
Thank you.
Maybe someday when I have some time, I'll come up and just talk to him. Jeffrey, I mean, hit a few balls, stuff like that.
I'm sure he'd appreciate it. My, it's late, and I'm sure I'm keeping you from something very important.
No. Look, the only thing I have to do is to make sure I don't get so drunk I burn about 6 holes in a new couch. Stay a while. Stay a little longer, Mrs. Martin. You see, my wife will be home very late, and they have this party after the show, and that's where the best acting is, at the party. Start telling each other how good they are. Better than any play they ever put on. Don't go, Mrs. Martin. Stay a while.
Perhaps I could make you some coffee. You seem a little tired.
Yeah, the word is drunk, Mrs. Martin. But I hold my liquor well, right?
Yes. Remarkable.
I'm going to be blunt again. We are both waiting for sure defeat to turn into sudden victory, Mrs. Martin, and it ain't going to happen. Do you know that there are people who die waiting for something that might not even exist?
Yes.
Don't hold on to hope, Mrs. Martin. Hold on to another human being. It's better.
I don't know if I can.
Well, you won't know if you don't try.
Do you take cream in your coffee?
One cream and 2 sugars.
You have heard Lou Gehrig Did Not Die of Cancer by Jason Miller. Barbara Spinelli was played by Nancy Kowalik. Mrs. Martin by Danielle Aubuchon. Victor Spinelli by Tony Marotti. It was produced and directed by your host, William Smithers. Recording engineer, Brian Brown. Sound editor, Lars Nelson. This has been a production of KCSB and the Santa Barbara Theater of the Air.